Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. If there's any one group of people fundamentally opposed to war, it's the doctors who've been there, stitching up the soldiers and the civilians caught in the crossfire. It was that frustration with war which led to the formation of Médecins Sans Frontières 32 years ago. Well, since that time, war has worsened, if that's possible. It's worse because the more recent wars are putting greater numbers of civilians at risk than in years past. Think of Rwanda. Think of Bosnia. Doctors Without Borders is an organization that speaks out. They criticize the politicians or the generals in a war where, as they see it, silence is a form of complicity. MSF developed a creed of sorts. One of the principles is the right to intervene, or beyond that, the duty to intervene. Bernard Kouchner was one of those young, idealistic French doctors whose experience in Nigeria and Biafra led him to found Médecins Sans Frontières. He has worked in Saigon, in northern Iraq, in Beirut. For 10 years, he was a minister in different French governments. In 1999, you may remember, he was chosen by the United Nations to lead its mission to Kosovo in the days right after the NATO bombing and the refugee crisis. Once again, the right to intervene. So, Connection listeners, in a week when the world seems poised for yet another intervention, this one in Iraq, what are the lessons of the past that we should heed now? At what point is intervention a humanitarian gesture rather than an act of war? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And with me in the Connection studio, Bernard Kouchner. He's currently in Boston as a visiting professor at the Harvard School of Public Health. Wonderful to have you here.
Thank you. Good morning.
I will begin by asking you the same question that I'm asking listeners, and that is, at what point is intervention something humanitarian? At what point is intervention an act of war? How is that decision ever to be made?
There is a big misunderstanding on the words humanitarian. What does it mean? Humanitarian, this is in connection with human attitude, human feelings, etc. So when a humanitarian intervention is named like that by the United Nations, because we have to pass through the United Nations system, when it is named humanitarian intervention, this is exactly the right to interfere you talk about. So this is in order, generally speaking, to save populations, to protect minorities. And yes, in Iraq, we had to. It's a long time ago. So humanitarian intervention is certainly better without a real war, better to be, let's say, by prevention, to act by prevention. Sometimes it's too late. And this misunderstanding is still going on nowadays.
It's probably behind the very debate that we're watching at the UN Security Council.
Yes. The very debate and the very bad debate we are watching, not only at the Security Council, is, let's say, on very false reason of war, going to war. Destruction of mass weapons, yes, where are they? Is it really in a hurry right now? Second, linkage in between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, where? It has not been proved. But the main reason, according to my humble perception, and I was working there in Iraq in 74, years and years close to the Iraqi people, the main reason and the main interlocutor on this stage are the Iraqi people, is the Iraqi people, but nobody is listening to them, unfortunately.
But nobody can listen to them. Saddam Hussein has that country so locked up, so closed up, that those people do not have a voice. Isn't that part of the reason why intervention is being considered now?
Right. But some of them, representative outside of the country, we better listen to them, because they are suffering of the war, because the cause of the war, the real deep roots of the war, are Mr. Saddam Hussein himself. So since 30 years, and more than 20 years because of the embargo. They are suffering of the embargo. Also, the poor are suffering of the embargo. They are fighting or supporting Saddam Hussein. And it is not in the debate. It is not enough listened in the debate in the Security Council. For me, humanitarian activist, this is eventually the main reason not to go to war, but to ask and to press Saddam Hussein to leave.
Now, does that mean that you also disagree with the position that has been taken at the Security Council by the French government, by the German government, by, to a lesser extent, the Chinese and the Russians? You disagree with the way that they are trying to restrain an attack on Iraq?
Yes and no. I disagree with this French and German position because they are not talking of the main problem because
they're not talking about the Iraqi people, is what you're saying.
They are not enough or not at all talking about the Iraqi people, first. And second, apparently they don't understand that Mr. Saddam Hussein is the cause of the war. And so they don't want to listen to those, but your country, by example, who are talking about the removal of Saddam Hussein. If you want to get rid of the war, of the suffering of the people, if we want and I want the Iraqi gets rid of the war, we have to remove Mr. Saddam Hussein. By force? No. On the contrary, I believe that it should have been possible with this military pressure not to go to war. But unfortunately, the international community was not in agreement.
Do you think it's still possible today? Or do you think we have passed that point? I remember...
I hope, because I want to hope that this is still possible, going through the UN, because one country cannot, must not decide alone, going through the UN and having a real political talk, like we did before Kosovo in Rambouillet, with the interlocutors, the people of the areas, etc. To press Saddam Hussein to leave.
The conference at Rambouillet failed.
I know.
It didn't stop Slobodan Milosevic from...
That's why, after, with all the agreement of all the countries who are now in disagreement, like Russia, like China, the other one, France, etc., yes, we went on bombing for a short while, and Mr. Milosevic is now facing the tribunal. So we need an agreement of the international community. This is not a theoretical argument. There is a real need to be all the democratic countries in agreement. Unfortunately, this is not the case.
Now, what if I were to say that the idea of a conference to discuss how Saddam Hussein might leave Iraq is naive? He's not going to go. He hasn't left. It's all he's got.
My dear, it was naive to believe that Saddam Hussein will face a tribunal, and we did it.
It's you mean always Slobodan naive. Milosevic?
Slobodan Milosevic. And it's always naive to be a pioneer.
And so how would it work? Just in practical terms.
But we have a lot of things.
You have the United Nations. It is the forum for all the countries to sit and talk together. You're saying that it's not working there. How could you construct?
Only one example. You know that there is a no-fly zone.
Mm-hmm.
And in the north, the Brits and the American, unfortunately the French were there at the beginning, and they are no longer in the sky, they protect this Kurdish zone. It has changed tremendously the life of the people, and democracy is now going on there. Why don't we take the whole country as a non-flying zone? Mm-hmm. And why didn't we implement ourselves the UN resolution in Baghdad? It is absolutely possible without a war. This is an example. Why aren't we sending human rights watchers and human rights people just to watch and to see and to control? Why? Without a war. Meanwhile, of course, the iron circle of the military people would have a sort of presence, a permanent pressure. This is possible. But unfortunately, to the question, is it still possible, I would answer that it remains just few days.
Tell me what has failed in political terms. Is it that the politicians on both sides of the debate have been more concerned with their own image, their own sort of male pride than actually talking about what would be best for the Iraqi people? Is that the principal flaw you're talking about?
Yes, but the The first, if I may say so, the first mistake came from President Bush, because he just jumped, he just transmuted his attention to Afghanistan directly to Iraq, with the two reasons I offered you, with the two reasons, one, the linkage with
weapons of mass destruction, yes.
And weapon of mass destruction, and relationship with Osama bin Laden. And neither the one nor the second were in a hurry. There was no threat coming out from Iraq, but the usual threats in 10 years. Second, yes, the images of the fight of the politician, this sort of virile confrontation, was certainly part of the reason. And the third is that it was only around the Security Council, and not like I told you before, like we organized a contact group for Kosovo or for Bosnia, and long political talks. Yes, it failed in Rambouillet, but after 3-4 months, we have had time enough to be together and to inform the public opinion. The public opinion is all over demonstrating in the street, including and mainly in new streets in United States, because they didn't understand. They didn't understand why we just transferred our, let's say, willingness of war to Iraq right now.
You were a year and a half in Pristina, in Kosovo, right after the NATO bombing, trying to establish some form of peace there. What's the lesson that you learned there that you think applies to what we see ahead of us for Iraq?
As I told you, the main thing was the implication of all the democratic countries through the UN system, And the second, certainly, as a strategy, was the implementation and the implication of all the actors on the stage in Kosovo. It's a long, long time work. You must give time to the time. It might take sometimes 1 week, sometimes 6 months to put the people together. And also to be transparent in information every time. It was too quick facing the Iraqi crisis. And certainly also, but it's apart from your question, European people did not realize how tremendous was the shock of the 9/11, of the bombing of, of the World Trade Center attempt. And after 1 year and 2 years, we, unfortunately, like for all the events, we have forgotten this fantastic, let's say, shake it was for you.
Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. My guest, Dr. Bernard Kouchner, says you have to give time to the times, both to understand events like September 11th, but also to consider what comes next in Iraq. And we'd like to have you join our conversation, 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. A top aide to Osama bin Laden, who was arrested last week.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. With me in the studio, Dr. Bernard Kouchner. He's the former UN administrator in Kosovo, former French Minister of Health and co-founder of the humanitarian relief organization Médecins Sans Frontières and Médecins du Monde. And we've been talking about intervention. I wonder if we can kind of turn our conversation about Iraq to looking at what might come after, because that's the lesson you have so clearly in your mind from Kosovo. And I'll begin with a question about what has been accomplished, what can be accomplished. It's been 3.5 years since NATO bombed the Serbian areas to prevent the Serbian army from continuing to persecute the Kosovar Albanians. It's been 3.5 years since the Kosovo Liberation Army stopped its own retaliations. These were two fighting sides, not just a fight on one side, as you perhaps know better than the rest of us. But 3.5 years later, people wonder, is anything any better in Kosovo, in Pristina? The people are still living apart. They still don't even, they're not even allowed into each other's hospitals. Give us some encouraging news here.
A lot has been done. No, no, don't say so. You cannot imagine the change. First, they are living freely, not all the Serbs. This is our failure. But you know, as I offer you to think about, give time to the time, after 5 centuries of hatred, deep confrontation, don't believe that it will change overnight. It will change along the years, so 3 years and a half. Unfortunately, it is not enough. But democracy is going on. 3 elections, 3 control, fair, democratic elections. A president of this autonomy, a prime minister, a government, a parliament with Serbs and all the ethnic groups and the Albanian and the Turks and the Bosniak and etc. We rebuilt the country more or less completely. Of course, the investment is not enough because who is going to invest there? We have to offer them security to the investors. A lot of the schools are working every day. The hospital are working, etc. This is day and night. But this is not the end. Absolutely not. The final status was not contained in the Resolution 1244, which was my Bible. And the final status in between Belgrade and Pristina certainly must be chosen. I don't know when. I don't want to interfere in my successor's work, but in between autonomy and independence. And it will take some additional months or years. But this is absolutely day and night. First, we stopped the war. We stopped the killing. We stopped the mass massacres. And Mr. Milosevic, another time. And really, Mr. Milosevic, I knew him very well, and I've been confronted to Mr. Milosevic. This is not the same person like Saddam Hussein. We are not talking about the same scale of massacre. Srebrenica was awful, awful. 7,500 were killed in a real genocide. But Mr. Saddam Hussein, he killed 500,000 person of his own population, apart from the other 500 killed and massacred in between the war between Iran and Iraq. This is not the same scale. But to be quick, Kosovo is getting better, certainly yes, but this is not the end.
All right, let's take our first call from Lexington, Massachusetts. Peter's joining us. Hello, Peter.
Hello. I wanted to ask Professor Kushner, or Mr. Kushner, about his opinion of the foreign... I had two questions. One was the foreign policy of Jacques Chirac and Dominique de Villepin, and the... I know that Dominique de Villepin has been on his wife's radio show, and I don't know whether she is a friend or not, and whether he thinks that, among other reasons, they are inhibited by the large Muslim population, which... is already causing problems for the laic state and the very idea of the French Republic. Are they inhibiting or transforming French foreign policy? That is, and is that reflected in what de Villepin and Chirac are doing?
All right, Peter, thank you for your call.
First, my wife is a TV journalist, and she's not obliged to receive only friends, fortunately. There is no relationship in between. You are not obliged to receive me because I was a friend. We just met each other. No, certainly not. And I was not in Paris when Dominique de Villepin was facing the TV. Well, two very difficult questions. The first about the relationship in between the relation in between the French policy and the fact that we have close to 5 million Muslims in our country. Really, I don't think that it is the reason. Certainly not. Certainly not. It's not a recent number coming in our country. On the contrary, this is the third generation of Muslims. They are not all different. No, how can I say? The way Mr. President Bush, for the second time, jumped from Afghanistan. We were in Afghanistan all together, sir. And French soldiers are still active in Kabul. And it was absolutely a just war to defeat the Taliban and to defeat Osama bin Laden. And I think I'm not no longer the speaker of the French government. I'm a member of the Socialist Party and I'm in the opposition. They didn't understand, and partly not only the government, but the population not understood why we were going, we had to go to Iraq. It was a long story. Remember that President Mitterrand, who was a socialist, participate in the former Gulf War, and we were close to the American and all together. Because we had, in that time, the support of the UN and the resolution. And I wrote myself, I was a member of the government, this famous resolution 688 in order to protect the Iraqi population inside Iraq. We were absolutely in advance, and we did it with the Kurds. But
the French government agreed with the first resolution this fall, 1441.
Yes.
They signed that.
Yes.
And they have now made this concerted campaign to make sure that no further resolution is passed. Dominique de Villepin is, as we speak, touring the African countries to try and make sure that they will not back the U.S. push for another
yes,
resolution.
Like the British minister did, and like the American minister
absolutely
did.
I guess what I'm are you saying that the French are on the right side here in using these tactics to,
as you use it, political tactic is not right or wrong, this is politics. But don't try to corner me. I'm in disfavor of Bush politics, and also I'm in disfavor of the French policy, because I'm the writer, or one of the inspirer, if I may say so, of the right to interfere, the right to intervene, in order to save or to protect by advance, by prevention, minorities group. And it has not been the case, neither from Mr. Bush or from Mr. Chirac.
So Peter's question, it was not about Mr. Bush, but it was about Monsieur de Villepin and Jacques Chirac, and he wants to know what you think is behind their thinking now. Why are they making it such a powerful campaign? Is it about peace?
It's certainly also about peace, but this is mainly, I guess, because they need that one country cannot decide to attack another because the government is not responding to his wish. We have to go through the UN. And it was a good first round when Dominique de Villepin with Colin Powell accepted, both of them, they accepted to come through the Security Council. After something was, they slipped somewhere in their relationship, mm-hmm. and it was damageable. But the first round was a good round of diplomats. And now we are facing a second or not, another resolution or not, in order what? To go directly on war, even if, and I'm still in favor of peace. I believe still there is a little window for peace opportunity to be together. Even after, we must be together, the French and the American, in order to establish democracy, which is the main goal. In itself, the war is not a goal, not a target, not a purpose. The aim of the problem is certainly Mr. Saddam Hussein, and I disagree with the French when they offer us eventually to disarm Saddam Hussein, but not to push him out. And this is the heart of the misunderstanding.
1-800-423-8255. Next to Cambridge, Massachusetts, Julia's calling in. Hi, Julia.
Yes, hello. It's a follow-up to Peter's last question,
yeah,
for Dr.
Ahead.
Kushner. I wanted to know why the French and Germans haven't come up with in terms of their counterproposal, why didn't they propose the use of human rights monitors, freezing Saddam's assets in Switzerland and in other countries, and possibly using UN security forces? I mean, there are other methods available, other means available at the UN, and why did the French and Germans not come up with some proposal like this? And is it too late?
I hope not, but I completely, fully support your question and now your proposal. Why? And why on the American side? Why? Why didn't we act like we did for Bosnia, Kosovo, Timor, Sierra Leone, etc.? You're completely right. It was a real pity for me.
Do you have any insight why the French... I mean, it seems so obvious.
Well, I think that it was too late because, honestly, when this problem was offered to us, the answer from President Bush was already on his way because the soldier left to the Gulf, and we perceived, we, all the public opinion, I'm not another time, I'm not the speaker of the French government.
But it didn't have to be an either-or situation. We could have had troops, U.S. and British troops outside of Iraq, as well as these other, couldn't we have?
Yes, a double misunderstanding on the nature of the regime in Iraq, in between the Brits, the American, and the other, the German and the French mainly, but in addition, other very strong countries like Mr. Putin, and nobody was talking in the same time about the massacre in Chechnya, and China, and others, and others, and... In addition, all the millions of demonstrators in the democratic countries more than in the Muslim countries, you notice that. And the second misunderstanding was on the removal of Mr. Saddam Hussein. I cannot invent another explanation. I think we were in disagreement, the French and the German, and mainly the French, look like if they are not, and it is not, the wording of the 1440 resolution is not in favor of getting rid of Saddam Hussein. It was a mistake. According to me, it was a mistake.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. Julia, thanks very much for your call. You said a couple of moments ago that the war is not an end. It is a means, assuming it goes ahead, and that it's vitally important for the international community to be together to help with reparations in Iraq, in the whole region. Are you worried that the ill will, that the bad feelings that have been generated between countries like the United States and France over their inability to find any agreement at the UN, are you worried that that may prevent some kind of cooperation after the war?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. And I'm worried because if I understand well, the American did accept the presence of the Turkish armies up in the north of Iraq. And this is very, very dangerous. I've been working there for years.
You mean allowing the Turks to come across the border into northern Iraq?
Yes, I don't understand why they did accept that. And I know that on the other side, Belgium, Germany and France veto was... These vetoes were partly responsible of the situation, but to accept the Turkish invasion of the Kurdish Iraqi province, as they were so wise not to ask I'm picking of the Kurds, they were so wise not to ask for independence, but on the contrary, for the first time in their history, in the history of these 25 million people without a nation, to go back to Baghdad and to participate in a democratic government, they told us. So yes, I worry, yes.
And when you think about that time and the circumstances that will face the Kurds, the Shiites, the Assyrians, the Turkmen, the Sunni Muslims trying to get along in Iraq, at one level, we are looking at a group of people who will have even more difficulty finding common ground than the people in Kosovo are finding common ground. It's possible.
I don't think so. Kosovo was really something... not at the same scale, of course. Yes, there are all the groups you quoted. Yes, they exist, the Shiites and the And the Sunnites and the Kurds and the Assyrian and etc. Yes, but this is an old, not country, but an old area. They are used to be together and to work together. And they are rich because of the oil and not only because of the oil. And they apparently accepted already to participate. And they are working since months and months on a federal constitution. And nobody is talking about that. So problems, yes. Without solution, no. Democracy will be the solution. Democracy is the solution for all this problem. Not another time overnight, not the day after the war. But they are already in war against their own regime. How many millions of exiled people? How many millions wants to come back? How many people want to leave? How many people want to be free and to live in freedom? There is a chance. There is also a lot of difficulties and a lot of worries.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. My guest is Dr. Bernard Kouchner. He is one of the co-founders of the humanitarian relief organization Médecins Sans Frontières. He's also the former UN administrator in Kosovo and a former French minister of health. And we're talking about intervention, something that he has used and worked to understand through his 30 years of dealing with humanitarian crises around the world. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Coming up on Here and Now at Noon, the latest news and reports that this nation lost more than 300,000 jobs.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. With me in the studio, Bernard Kouchner. He's currently in Boston as a visiting professor at the Harvard School of Public Health, but you will recognize his name from his year and a half spent as the first UN special representative administering Kosovo in the days, weeks, and months after the NATO bombing campaign and the refugee crisis there. Connection listeners, while we have Dr. Kouchner with us in the studio, we thought it was a good time to ask, what are the lessons of the past that we should heed now? At what point is intervention the proper tactic? 1-800-423-8255. And I'll begin, if I can, just while we wait for our callers. Dr. Kouchner, how much of that decision, when intervention is appropriate, comes from your training as a doctor, that sense of providing medicine, and how much of it is from your time as a politician? Or do you separate the two?
I don't separate the two, never. I believe that humanitarian intervention or to take care of the people or eventually to help them or to rescue them is part of politics. Of course, some are absolutely, let's say, out of politics. They don't want to see politicians. They don't want to be involved. But this is a childish attitude. Human rights are part of politics. I'm very proud to participate in the coming and not coming back, coming of human rights inside the international law. So for me, to protect a minority is a political duty and a human duty. So I make sometimes no difference.
All right. 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Dalville, South Carolina, and Paul's joining us. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you, sir. Just a kind of a questioning comment. Being intervention, especially for humanitarian, is very important. How do you put it? When it's ending up that we're going to war or possibly going to war for the intervention, at this point, when both sides seem to be frozen in their views, because it seems to have divided mainly in two sides, is there any way to unfreeze this?
When you talk about both sides, you mean the dispute between the French and the Americans at the Security Council?
No, not necessarily the French and Americans, but those that believe intervention should be war.
Fair enough.
And those that any intervention should be peace. You know, peaceful means.
Yes, he's right. Two camps, unfortunately. Is there a last possibility to go all together to, let's say, firm, determined, but without war solution, not a peaceful solution, a without war solution? Yes, this is certainly to give enough time for the international community to reach a point where they would be in complete agreement on the necessary withdrawal of Saddam Hussein, with the participation of the Iraqi people. Is it a dream? Yes, it is a dream. Is it possible? I don't know. I don't know. It's late.
The point you're making, it has not been tried, is what you're saying.
But you are completely right. It has not been tried. And this is why I'm not along the French, neither along President Bush. And I remember when we were on the eve of an agreement, on the verge of an agreement in Rambouillet's talk, we were close to the solution. Well, Mr. Milosevic didn't sign, so all together we went on war. We go to the bombing, but after having tried all the rest of the solution, it has not been done in Iraq. And I was in favor of the withdrawing of Saddam Hussein in the first Gulf War in 91. Why didn't we do that? Why? We were close. Do you know that 14 regions on 18 Iraqi regions were free? The people liberate their region themselves against Saddam Hussein forces. And we didn't support them. We betrayed them. So long time after, we are coming back without explanation. And another time, I understand the French position. I understand that we have to go to the UN. They are right. We all of us, and including, of course, the American and the Brits and the others, they have to go through the UN. But why aren't we talking about getting rid of Saddam Hussein? This is the main problem. I'm sorry to repeat that.
1-800-423-8255 to Steve, who's called in from Boston. Hello, Steve.
Hi.
Go ahead.
A quick question. The process in Kosovo, while admirable, took months and months to put together and cost thousands of people's lives while we dithered and dathered as an international community. If in fact, the goal is to save people's lives, wouldn't that suggest that sometimes quick action, and in this case, unilateral action, because the United States seems ready to do it, isn't that what's going to save the most amount of lives in the end? And if that's what we're talking about, why aren't we advocating much quicker action? Because these international groups seem to take forever.
Partly you're right. But we have to go through the UN channel, not alone. It will be the break of all the international law, and not only that, but the break down of the UN system.
But let me interrupt for just a minute. The world did not go through the United Nations in Kosovo. Everybody knew that they couldn't do that because it was likely the Russians would veto it at the Security Council.
Yes, but they rushed after.
No, but they went through NATO,
yes.
and that was the organization. And what Steve is asking is if it takes a long time to go through the international organizations like NATO or like the United Nations or even NATO, aren't there times? And is this one when a unilateral action might be justified?
This is not untrue, but now the gap is larger than in Kosovo. So it will damage the whole international relationship. Look at what happened in Europe. But I want to answer more precisely. Yes, sometimes we better were quicker because we wait in Bosnia, 250,000 were killed. We wait too long in Bosnia. But who started? Chirac in that time and John Major. Second, we wait too long in Kosovo, but less longer than in Bosnia. So we had around, I don't know the number, the exact number, 10,000 victims. Too much, of course, but less. And we rush to Macedonia by advance. and we only send 1,000 blue helmets, and there was no war. So yes, by prevention, yes, we have to be quick, but we have to be in agreement altogether.
Why does that matter so much?
That matters because the only place where we can, all the nation, be in agreement to save a situation or to rescue a minority is the UN system. Don't break the only system working all around the world. It will be a very, very dramatic incident.
Do you feel that that's at risk right now? The UN system, the integrity of the UN system is at risk?
I feel like it was true, but I hope that I exaggerate a bit.
No, I ask you because I had an international lawyer in the program on Friday, and what she was saying was the reverse. She was saying that the United States was talking about unilateral action 8 months ago, but the UN kept the focus on
True.
New York. The debate has remained at the Security
Thanks
Council.
Thanks to the French?
Well, let's you know, give credit where credit is due to whoever kept that focus.
Whoever?
No. But, okay, that's what I'm saying. But the fact that the debate lasted as long as it did, she says, is evidence that the UN is working, not that the UN is broken.
But the UN is working at the UN speed. It's always like that. But I told you I'm in agreement. The first round was a good political and diplomatic round. The second, unfortunately, was like a boxing game.
Mm-hmm.
And this is
still
unfortunate.
Is.
And still is. And this is unfortunate. Let me hope that it remains this little window of getting together. Otherwise, we'll see. I'm not in favor of war, not at all. But if there is a war, I hope that the war will be very quick without this politically correct word, collateral damages on the civilian population.
You don't like that word as a doctor?
No. No.
Why am I not surprised?
Because it's always the civilian who is suffering,
exactly.
And not the butchers, and not the dictator. And to get rid as soon as possible of the dictator, and to let them, the Iraqi people, take their affairs, their own affairs, in hands.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Next to Wellesley, Massachusetts, and Parveen's on the line. Hi, Parveen.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Sure, thank you. Dr. Kushner, I had a question from you. Do you anticipate that the indifference of the world is going to change toward the people of Iran, who have brought a government into power that they ultimately have hated. And now that the country is again in woke regarding production of nuclear weapons.
Are you asking if intervention is something that is needed in Iran?
If he thinks there would be an intervention after Iraq.
Well, I hope so. I hope not. I don't know,
well,
but, you know, there was at the beginning of this sad story, this theory on the positive effect of domino in Middle East. I doubt. I hope that it will be the case, but I doubt. Getting to a democratic Iraq was my dream since years and years. You know, I've been the target of... Not myself, I don't want to, but Madame Mitterrand, I mean, President Mitterrand's wife was, I was with her when we have been targeted by Saddam Hussein, and we are not killed, but all around us, 20 people were killed, and I know the way he proceeds. I hope that democracy will come to Iraq. To the question of getting further to Iraq, and what about Saudi Arabia? Saudi Arabia is not a democracy. So are we going on war also to Saudi Arabia? No, it will be a sort of Dr. Folamour's stories.
Let me ask you if you were asked to go to Iraq to do the work that you did in Kosovo.
Yes.
What would be the essence of your job there? What would be the one sign you would put up above your desk to remind you every day?
Good luck. Remember that no success will go unpunished. All the words we used to To utilize in the UN system. No, I've not been asked, and this is not the problem. The problem is to get peace as soon as possible, not to go to war, to get rid of Saddam, to be together, to proceed to the elementary, let's say, to offer the elementary concept of democracy to Iraq. And don't accept, please, sir, because of what happened in Korea, that we don't have to talk about democracy in Iraq. This is like if you were asking to a doctor, you know, I'm suffering of malaria and tuberculosis, and you say, two sicknesses is too much. No, take one after the other. And please, I want to pray the demonstrator in which I believe, because I demonstrated all my life. I'm a human rights activist. Please, in your demonstration, just add some banners to say, get rid of Saddam, and not only to attack Mr. Bush. Get rid of Saddam is certainly the best slogan of the momentum.
You're one of those people who would have us listen to the voices of the people
yes.
in Iraq.
Yes.
Not Saddam Hussein, not the Tariq Aziz, not the those
when
who speak
I saw
for the
Mr.
administration.
Tariq Aziz with the Pope, I realized that we were back on human rights 30 years before, and on the right to intervene, the circle of the protection of minorities, we were back 20 years before.
Well, we should talk again. I want to thank you for coming in to spend an hour with us.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Bernard Kouchner, former UN administrator in Kosovo, former French Minister of Health, and co-founder of the humanitarian relief organization Médecins Sans Frontières. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. To purchase cassettes and CDs of The Connection, please visit www.theconnection.org or phone 1-800-909-9287.
This is WBUR. Coming up next on Here and Now, the Washington Roundtable considers the political waiting game surrounding the expected U.S. war with Iraq. That story and the news of the day coming up next on Here and Now. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by...